Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Don't sweat the technique.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So what was it that J.J. Watt said about team meetings?
J.J. said that he thinks that they are effective when you are talking to mid to average players and younger players that can be, with less experience, they need to be pushed to elevate their game and they can be a valuable tool. But he said that when they become necessary, it's a sign the team is struggling, potentially on the verge of falling apart. And he acknowledges the fact that they can be productive, but they don't always guarantee a positive outcome.
Yeah, feels about right for the Astros. It feels like where they're at. It truly does. Corey, why do the Astros refuse to bunt the Manfred man over an extras? Small ball is the way to go there. I'm not a fan of playing the small ball when you're the visiting team in Manfred Man. Like, you're playing for one run when the other team is going to start off the inning with a runner at second and nobody out. I'm not a fan of the Manfred Man bunting over thing in the top of the inning. Now, if the visiting team doesn't score a run, you're the home team, it makes more sense to play for the one run. Also, where you were in the order yesterday makes no sense. You had Christian Walker coming up. Christian Walker's not going to be asked to bunt. And I know you can't play out the rest of the inning with the alternate scenario that Walker did bunt, and it was successful, which are two reaches. But then Yiner popped up on the infield, and Caratini swung and missed. Yep. So if the result stayed the same, which isn't a guarantee, it isn't an apples-to-apples comparison, because maybe it changes what the pitcher throws, changes your approach as a hitter, all of that, they still would not have scored the run. I'm not a fan of the small ball on the top of the extra inning.
Well, I echo what you said, but I think what my opinion has always been, on the road, you don't play for one. You just don't, because if the home team gets to, you're done. So you definitely don't play the bunt and one when you're visiting.
I also hate the man-for-man extra inning rule. I think it is so stupid. Not that it would have changed the outcome at all yesterday, but I'm just not a fan.
I'd like to find someone that argues that against it, because I hate it.
Hate it. Although Caleb Ort, hey man, you got two chances to get one out, and you walked both of them. That was disappointing.
But here's the other thing: your fastball is 97.
And you didn't trust it.
Again, aside from the curveball, which he was at least getting to the bottom of the zone where it was a competitive pitch. Every one of his sweepers or whatever you're calling that thing on the outside corner was 3 feet off, and it wasn't competitive. If I'm going down, I'm going down with him swinging at my best pitch, which is 97, not trying to suddenly find it with that pitch on the corner.
Nitpick. I think I like the sweeper more than his fastball. Like, his sweeper was getting swing and miss. His fastball, I think they were on, and he wasn't throwing it for strikes. I didn't mind the decision to go with the sweeper. The execution was abysmal.
It just wasn't even close. I mean, at least a fastball, if I throw a fastball up, the hitter's also trying to think through what he's going to see and what he's got to do, too, that you would think that he might chase that.
Yeah. Like, you go to the Baez at bat where he needed a strike out there, swinging strike on a sweeper, foul ball on the sweeper, threw a ball because it was an 0-2 count, foul ball on the fastball, and then swinging strike on a sweeper. The Glaber at bat, which was the guy who walked, called strike on the sweeper. Sweeper with a ball, 1-1. Fastball out of the zone, not even close, 2-1. Called strike with the sweeper, 2-2. And then ball in the dirt sweeper, ball outside sweeper. Like, he had more command, actually, of the sweeper, I thought, in that 10th inning. And I don't think he trusted the fastball. But he yanked the sweeper. It wasn't close. That was disappointing. Because he almost got you out of the inning.
Yeah.
Almost got you out of it.
With two outs, you're thinking, hey, this could actually still end well. And then it just, he melted down.
He did. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chuck, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Chuck?
What's going on, guys? I'd just like to say one thing. I'm the difference between this year's Astros team and the last couple Astros teams without the pitching is exactly that. We don't have the depth in starting pitching that we used to. And that's going to be a problem. And as great as we played early in the season, it's as bad as we're playing now. It should equal out. Hopefully it'll equal out enough to where we bounce back and we make it to the playoffs. And, you know, it's just one of those things. It's a slump. Every team goes through it. A week ago, the Yankee fans were wanting to get rid of everything New York because they were going through it and about to be out of the playoffs totally. They turned it around. This takes a couple games. Once that happens, we'll be all right. And on a personal note, for Israel and Willie, I'm not mad at y'all because you're black. I don't care. I hate your takes. And I'm just going to keep telling you that. And I'm not gay, but I am very happy. Thank y'all.
Thank you, Happy Chuck.
Well played,
Appreciate
Chuck.
You calling in.
Yeah.
You know the Flintstones, they talk about having a gay old time. You ever watch the Flintstones growing up, the cartoon?
I did. Mm-hmm.
That's in their
that's
theme
part
song.
Part of the theme song,
gonna
yes.
Have a gay old time.
I was talking to someone.
It means happy. That's all
yes,
it means.
Yes, yes. Someone else brought up a song the other day,
it's
and
true.
I asked them if they realized that there was gay in it.
In the Flintstones?
No, there was another song.
Oh.
Someone brought up a pop radio song, and they were like, hey, and I go, do you know the next line of that?
I'm just happy that Chuck is happy. If Chuck is happy, I'm happy.
Look, I mean, I mentioned the Yankees, and I mentioned the Tigers as teams that have gone through the dog days. I mean, the Tigers lost 13 of 15. They had a long losing streak. The Yankees were close to teetering on being out of playoff contention when the Astros played them. And now their entire tides have turned yet again to where the Tigers are back close to the top of the American League. And the Yankees are right there with the Astros record-wise. So, yeah, they can snap out of this, but we know there's not much season left.
No, there's not. I mean, mid-30s with games remaining. 35 games left for the Houston Astros. It is tough. And like Chuck's point about the starting pitching, it doesn't feel wonderful right now. Hunter Brown, I trust Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown was nails yesterday, really good. Even whenever he got himself in trouble, was pitching out of trouble. He got in that first and third situation because the home plate umpire missed a strike three, and then the dude got a base hit the very next pitch. And then I can't remember who it was, but it might have been Glaber, actually. Went to right field. He goes first to third. He's in a first and third one out situation, gets out of it. Lead off triple from McKinstry, gets out of it.
Yep.
Like I mean, I have faith in Hunter Brown. It's hard to have any faith in Fromber. Costanza, it's hard to have faith in because it's George Costanza, and he's never been a big league pitcher in his life, but he's been pitching well. Totally understand. Javier, you don't have faith in. Arrigetti, you don't have faith in. Lance McCullers, you don't have faith in. Luis Garcia, yesterday at his rehab with the hooks, was awful. 4 1/3, 7 hits, 6 runs, 5 earned, walked 2. I did strike out 6. 84 pitches, 51 strikes. Outside of Hunter Brown, I don't have a tremendous amount of confidence in any starter. And then the bullpen outside of Brian Abreu, I have no confidence in.
Yeah, look, I thought that last night, Souza looked like he was back
he
on
did.
Track. But overall, I can't disagree. I mean, you're waiting for the clock to strike midnight on Costanza because he's been way better than you ever could have dreamed. Coming out of a situation where he looked like he wasn't good enough to make the A's anymore, and then suddenly he's been a savior for you. I can't disagree with you on Fromber. I just don't feel good. And Hunter finally got it back on track as well. But Hunter has been consistent for the most part. You would also look at the series against Detroit and go, they got a chance to win 2 out of 3. You got Fromber and Hunter on the mound against the Tigers, no matter how good they're playing. And you don't expect to see that Fromber Valdez today, but that's kind of baseball the way it goes when you're really reeling.
Israel says he doesn't even pay that goofy attention. Grimace emoji. He's talking about Chuck.
Yeah.
Jim Jeffries has a bit. Taylor Swift in one of her songs, says the text line. Mm. The texter says he sent us the wrong take about J.J. Watt. He said he hates players-only meetings and they're worthless. Maybe he, like, I guess, walked it back a little bit, according to the texter anyways. Who knows? Texter says I thought Petrie was great. Was that sarcasm, Blankers? He's talking about Pettis, not Petrie.
Oh, no. There was a lot of people that were critical of Gary Pettis' send.
He was very aggro.
He was hyper-aggressive.
Espada's not a true leader. He didn't even get fired up. He didn't even fire up the team last postseason when they were facing the Tigers. He said, I don't need to give them a speech. They know what to do. What kind of leader is that? I think that's overrated. Like, you don't need to give a veteran club a speech before a playoff series. I don't think Dusty ever did either. Dusty would be the first one to tell you that. Back in the day, Milo would have suggested a manager get thrown out or a good old bench-clearing brawl. It's not a bad idea. I thought Espada was going to get thrown out today with that strike zone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was surprised. Was it the second pitch of the game where Yiner not only froze for a half second, mm-hmm. he actually kept it there and kept and actually turned around shaking his head, where I thought, oh boy, someone's going to get tossed or someone's going to say something, and no one did.
The one on Melton was a bad one.
Oh, we got, yeah. Did he get rung up, or
it was a 3-2 pitch, and it was like a ball and a half inside. And it was right after the Yiner one, too.
I was going to say, he got one that stood out to me where I didn't think he ended up losing the at-bat and striking out eventually, mm-hmm. but he had another pitch that was, it was the first pitch of the at-bat. It was high. It was definitely above the letters, and he was like, what? Because he called it a strike.
Bullpen has been pretty good. Don't think they've given up a run in 3 straight games. It's a little misleading because today was a blowout and it was a getaway day. Yesterday, you only used, well, I guess you did use King, right? King in the 7th, yes. Sousa in the 8th, yes. Abreu in the 9th, but then you used Ort. Ort gave up a run, so mm-hmm. like that throws out that theory. They gave up a run last night. It was an unearned run, but it was a run.
Still a run.
Like, who in the bullpen do you legitimately trust? Because, like, for me, it's 1.5 guys. It's Abreu and then Sousa sometimes, and that's it. End of conversation.
Okert and King are guys that are capable of earning my trust back. They just haven't been good lately.
I don't have a tremendous amount of faith in Okert. He's been good, but I don't think he's going to go out and dominate. Keith from LA says 8 straight sweepers last night to end the game and a walk-off walk. It wasn't 8 straight sweepers. That's bad information you got there, Keith from LA. He threw a couple of fastballs there as well. This all started since a big number 13 was hung over the field, just saying.
Oh, yeah. Stop it.
Come on.
It's also 713 if you want to be the positive side of it.
It's unlucky. Hotels don't do that. They don't have a floor 13. You ever notice that?
Yes, I have noticed that.
I think, is that every hotel or just most hotels? I think it's just most hotels.
It was like someone, there was one of the chains that got credit for it, like that they were doing it all the time, and then everybody started doing it.
Crazy that Cam went from rookie of the year talk, now I really don't want him in the lineup. I think he should be sent down, Sugarland, for a variety of reasons that we've already discussed.
And Israel's on line one. No, not yet. Oh, it's coming. I thought it's coming.
Yeah, maybe so. All right, Yordan Alvarez yesterday. Pretty productive in his rehab assignment with the hooks. The plan with Yordan, according to all the higher-ups, is that he was going to play yesterday, day off today, play Thursday, Friday, and then see what's up. There needs to be a change of plan right now. Yordan needs to be on the first flight out of Corpus on his way to Baltimore to join the club tomorrow. 713-780-ESPN. Let's discuss. It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. So
coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So Yordan Alvarez, a successful rehab assignment, first day of the rehab assignment yesterday, picked up a couple of knocks, had an extra base hit, a walk, even stole a bag.
That's where I was waiting for you to get to. I was like, cringeworthy note. He stole the bag, and it didn't look smooth, and I didn't like it.
No, that was not wise, guys. That was not wise, guys. I would change the plan on Yordan Alvarez. Like, I know that he's been gone forever. I know he had a broken bone, and he's had a couple of setbacks. My stance on this is, what physical toll is going to happen at the big league level that he's already not going to experience at AA? I'm totally fine, like, babying him. I'm totally fine, like, same approach that you had with the rehab. You're going to play Tuesday. You're going to have Wednesday off. You're going to play back-to-back games Thursday, Friday. Probably going to have Saturday off. Who knows about Sunday? I'm not changing the amount of at-bats here. I'm changing the setting here. This is an offense that has been lifeless. This is an offense that went 31 straight innings without scoring a run. They were shut out 3 games in a row. They were shut out 4 of their last 5 going into today. They scored just 2 runs today, all on one swing of the bat. Yordan would instantly be one of your best 9 offensive players. Yes, I'm putting the bar low because there's 9 guys in a batting lineup. I don't need him to do any extra. Like, we're not playing every single day, Yordan. But if you're going to get swings in Corpus, if you're going to play on a Tuesday night, you're going to play on a Thursday night, you're going to play on a Friday night, I want those at-bats on the big league level. There's 35 games left. You're a game and a half up. This offense needs a jolt. I'm putting Yordan on a flight to Baltimore so he can meet the team tomorrow.
See, here's the thing. People like it when we disagree. But the thing that you have to factor into all of this on a couple of fronts is, one, this team is scuffling badly, and they need offensive help. They are not scoring runs. We know that's evident. The guy in the middle of the lineup that's capable of doing it is Jordan Alvarez. And if he is truly healthy, and if you are led to believe that he wasn't healthy early in the season, that's why he was scuffling and struggling, then this is a guy you could use. On top of that, let's think about to most every time that Jordan in the last year or two has been on any kind of an injury situation. He doesn't go to Sugarland. He doesn't get those games. They ramp him up. They bring in pitchers. They have him take his BPs. And the next thing you know, the best thing for Jordan is to not make a trip to Sugarland or Corpus. It's to get right back into the lineup, and that's what he's done. Well, that was then. This is now. And the biggest thing now is you need a spark. You need power. You need runs. You need at-bats from quality hitters, and that's exactly what Jordan is. I can't disagree with you because – on top of everything else you said, it's where this team is, the situation that they're stuck in, and the fact that he is one of their best players when healthy. So if you're telling me he's healthy, I think to me it came down to how he felt today.
Yeah.
Not even about, you know, thinking about the next two games in Corpus. If he woke up this morning with the same kind of attitude and feeling that he had last night when he did that press conference to say he felt good, there is no doubt through planes, trains, and automobiles, he needs to be in Baltimore.
There's a couple of counterpoints that I saw today. The first one is it was the physical part of it. Like, oh, he's been hurt so long, and you can't rush him back because he could re-aggravate the injury. What is he doing differently from a physical toll standpoint in Corpus that he would be doing in Houston? How do Major League at-bats, whether it's four tomorrow, four Friday, off day, four Sunday, how does that differ from four at-bats in Corpus those days? To me, it doesn't. Am I reading that wrong?
No, because of the fact that that's normally when there is a leg injury or an arm injury, when guys have to ramp back up. He's been running. We've heard he's been doing baseball activities on the field, like running bases, like doing things like even shagging flies in the outfield, doing and throwing. Those were the kind of things that didn't bother what he was going through. So it's not the same situation. You can't do that the same way because he's already gotten his conditioning and everything to where it needs to be.
So I dismissed the whole like injury thing. Like, yes, the hand could flare up. Absolutely, the hand could flare up four at-bats tomorrow in Corpus, just the same as it could flare up four at-bats in Baltimore against the Orioles. So I don't the health thing to me that doesn't resonate at all. Now, I think Dustin brings up the best counterpoint. Jordan wasn't swinging the bat good to begin with. His timing was off. Let him come up with a rhythm because he was certainly out of one whenever he left. Okay, I think that is a fair point. Like, I think that's part of the rehab assignment is that you want to get the players ramped up, get them in rhythm, find their groove again. That way they can join the team and hit the ground running. Totally understand that. I just think that an out-of-rhythm Jordan Alvarez is instantly one of your top five offensive players, and this team desperately needs offense right now, and there's 35 games left. It would be much different if it was June 1st, if there was, you know, 70 games left, if you had a five-game lead on the division. I would even be okay keeping Jordan down for a few more days, maybe the rest of the week, join on the homestand. If you were winning games, if your offense looked good, but you're not winning games. The offense has been as dreadful. A historic drought we have not seen in this city for 40 years. If Jordan's swinging the bat and he's healthy and he feels good, to your point, I want those at-bats, even if they're out of rhythm, to be taking place with the Astros.
Yeah, and I don't think that rhythm is anywhere of a concern for him because it hasn't been in the past. And I do think wholeheartedly that the slow start this season was the fact that this has been a lingering hand issue that was going on at the start of the season that probably never went away from the end of last season, that he was feeling probably without telling anybody about it throughout the spring training portion of the season, to where that's where I would basically put all of my issues with timing and or struggling at the plate. For the majority of his career with the Astros, he has been the best power hitter, one of the best, if not the best hitter for average on this baseball team. And I don't think he worries or we should worry about that stuff. It's just as long as it don't hurt, he can fix some things.
Yeah, and look, I'm willing to concede that he wouldn't be at 100% obviously tomorrow. But I'll take a 75% Yordan Alvarez in this lineup instantly. Also, he commands respect. Like, what would he do to the middle of the order for the rest of this team? Like, your pitcher facing Yordan, even if he's one day off a rehab assignment, is going to respect Yordan. Everybody else bumped down a spot in the lineup. You don't have to see Taylor Trammell got hurt, but you don't have to see Taylor Trammell for four at-bats. You get, instead, a 75% Yordan Alvarez. So, I'm making the move. I'm changing the setting on his rehab. I'm letting him rehab the rest of the way with the Astros.
Let's also think about this, Jeremy, from the exact thing that we've been dealing with for the last month, and that is getting starting pitchers back. Starting pitchers aren't coming back, and they're 100%. You know they're not stretched out to that level. You know that they're not going to be pushed to 100 and some pitches. But you know what? They're better than what you got, so they're in the lineup, and they're doing what they need to do because at 75%, to your point with Yordan, at 75% of Yordan is better than 100% of some of the guys that have been in this lineup. Just like from a pitching perspective, why you wanted to see Javier back, why you want to see some of these guys coming back, because you know that the guys that they'd be replacing, they're better than no matter where they are and how their arm feels. Mm-hmm. That's why it makes all the sense in the world that with this specific player, in this situation where this team is, he should be the guy coming back to play for you.
And look, I'm not going to sit here. I'm not going to play him every day. Like, I'm going to give him the same days off. I'm going to give him the same ramp up. It's just, I rather those ABs come with the Astros rather than Corpus because he makes your offense better. And look, I'm not asking him to play left field either. Like, he's going to DH. He's going to get off his behind from the pine and go up there four to five times. Hopefully five times. I mean, you had a good day offensively. And that's it. And, like, I saw some other people, well, his conditioning isn't good. What? If his conditioning is good, then Yordan Alvarez is a problem. Because anything below his hand has not been hurt all year. So if he's not in shape and he's not conditioned, then that's on Yordan Alvarez.
Some of the news stations had video of him running the bases and doing the other things. I'm not worried about conditioning. This is, like I said, it's not an extremities injury with your legs or your arms where it would be a different story. This is a guy that has everything other than swinging a bat with what he's been dealing with his hand should be ready to go. There shouldn't be any issues.
And look, minor league rehab numbers don't matter, but it's not like he was 0 for 5 yesterday with 5 strikeouts. He was 2 for 4 the walk. Like, I think he's seeing the baseball decently. To 100%, to like his full efficiency, there's no way that he could be there yet. But is he going to get there quicker seeing double-A pitching or major league pitching? You know, that could be argued. But I thought he saw the ball pretty decently yesterday. He went 0 for 5 with 5 punchies. Almost got hit in that first at-bat, too, by the way.
Well, I was going to bring that up as well, is the fact that when you start talking about rehab, at least with major league pitching, their accuracy is better. They're better at every pitch that they're throwing, so you don't have to worry about him getting another injury separate from the hands just because of the fact that a guy can't control his stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that is, you would think there would be more wildness in AA than the bigs. I think that's fair to say. 713-780-ESPN, out to the HRMP listener line. Keith, you're in the Hive. What's up, Keith?
Hey, guys, two quick questions. You think the Astros should have made a play at Nathaniel Lowe, who just signed with the Red Sox? Looks like he hit a home run as well. And then also, what's going on with Jesus Sanchez? He's in a 0 for 27, 0 for 28. Was that the right call in that trade?
Appreciate the call, Keith. I don't think they should have. I don't think they need Nathaniel Lowe. I don't think that's a guy that, with all the guys that they acquired and they have, and we already talked about how crowded the infield is, and even the DH spot with all the guys that you want to see try to get at bats for this baseball team, I don't think Nathaniel Lowe was an answer or even a consideration for the Astros. So I will poo-poo that one right off the top.
Yeah, I wasn't too inspired with picking up Nathaniel Lowe, so I never really batted an eye at that. Not interested. He's had a bad year. He wasn't good last year either.
Aside from the World Series year, when has he been good?
And that's it.
Yeah,
which might investigate that year.
Yeah, there might be some questions unanswered on that.
851 OPS that year. His next highest in his career was 779.
What was the other question, Keith?
It was about Jesus Sanchez. Oh. His struggles. Was that the right move at the deadline?
I think so. I mean, look, he was a left-handed bat. Look, early on, we were raving about the guy. He got hits right away. He came into the lineup and looked like exactly what they needed. And now, just like we said with everything else, he's pressing. He's a new guy in a new environment, in a new situation with a team that's struggling. I'm sure he's pressing just as much as the young guys because he wants to contribute and prove he was worthy of being traded for and being a guy that they brought in to be kind of the help they needed.
That's the underrated thing about getting Yordan up here too, is that everybody else is one spot lower in the lineup. That gets one iota of pressure off their back. Mm-hmm. And look, I think that there's a psychological element of it too. Like, this offense is reeling, it's struggling. Oh, Yordan Álvarez just walked through the clubhouse and he's batting fourth tonight? I think that's something that plays. I think that, you know, like Yogi Berra said, 50% of baseball is half middle. Or that wasn't it. What do you say, 100% of baseball is half middle? Maybe it was 50%.
I think it's 50%.
50% of baseball is half mental. Yeah. So you see Yordan Álvarez walk in there, and 50% think of baseball is half mental, then the offense is going to start clicking, baby.
Think about the lift they got when Correa came back. It wasn't just Correa himself who got a lift coming back.
They got swept in that series.
No, but he came back and he immediately started hitting, and guys in the clubhouse were excited that Correa was back. This team needs some positive energy. I'm not saying it's going to result to not getting swept, like you said, but they can take any kind of mojo that they can get in a positive way. I also, to Keith's point, and I said this yesterday, I know Sanchez is struggling. If he's struggling, I don't want to see him in the cleanup spot. No, I don't want to see him in the middle of the lineup.
That's what Yordan coming back would do. Like, yeah. He would move down. It does feel like Sanchez is a very streaky hitter. Like, getting to know him a little bit, he seems like he's a very streaky guy. Because whenever he got traded here, his first few games, like, okay, this guy looks really good. And then right now he looks really bad. I think he's super streaky. And
he's also super platoonable because of the fact that he can't hit lefties.
And he's super Jameis Winston-y, too. 713-780-3776. Yordan Álvarez, are you changing the setting of his rehab? Instead of his rehab in Corpus Christi, why not move in the rehab to Baltimore with the big league team? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Yordan, do you change the setting of his rehab? They're babying him. Look, they should baby him. Like, I'm not arguing that. I'm not trying to get Yordan more at-bats. I'm just changing where he's getting those at-bats. Instead of double-A Corpus, it's big league Baltimore. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Philip, you're in the Hive. What's up, Philip?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to see what your thoughts are on maybe when Garcia's ready or somebody else, that they go ahead and move Eric Geddy to the bullpen with Hader down, with the idea that Abreu's the closer and then you use Eric Geddy in the Abreu role. I just question whether or not he's going to be ramped up enough to be an effective starter in the playoffs anyways. Hmm. So if he's pitching out of the pen and with Hader as a question mark with his strikeout ability, maybe he's more likely to be back to, you know, 90% of who he was as a one at a time versus maybe being a 65-70% as a starter. And I think right now with Hader's question mark and with some other guys coming back that can start, maybe his value is better in that position. What do you guys think?
Appreciate the call, Philip. No, I mean, look, it's a valid point. We were talking about Blue Ball as being a guy that might get a look because he's got an above-average fastball and he's got some stuff, and he had a good start his last appearance where he's got some confidence he can get major league hitters out. Spencer Arrighetti has at times been a really good pitcher that at the start of the year was penciled in to be your three. So when you look at it, it's not a bad thing to think about that if you, instead of him doing what he's done or not been able to do in his last couple of starts, say, hey, just go down to the bullpen. It's an inning or two innings max. So empty the tank. Go throw your fastball and go let it rip and let's see what we get out of it, because his stuff probably is better than several guys in that bullpen.
I don't love the idea of Luis Garcia replacing Arrighetti in the rotation.
Like, no, I don't think you can count on that.
No. I don't want to just like rebuke the idea, but I don't think the timing is right. I think this is more if you're in the playoffs, let's discuss it then. I think that Arrighetti has a chance over the final 35 games of the season to be your third best starter. And if he's your third best starter, I don't want to bump him to the pen.
Does he have a chance or does he have the stuff to do it?
Both.
Because I think he has the stuff, but I'm just wondering how many times you're going to keep throwing him out there when he's thrown up all over himself in the last couple.
But the alternatives are Lance McCullers, Luis Garcia, and J.P. France.
Yeah. I mean, and you probably wouldn't put Blue Ball back out there?
Oh, I prefer the idea of Blue Ball in the pen. Blue Ball's a guy I like in the pen.
But I'm saying he's also could be in your mix of starters if you think that he's better than at least one of those guys.
He wouldn't start for me. He'd be in the bullpen for me. He'd be like a multi-inning mid-leverage guy for
the rest
me.
Of the way?
No, not necessarily the rest of the way. He can promote himself.
Playoffs is a different story.
He can promote himself.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't have Blue Ball in the rotation. He'd be in my pen. So I would hesitate to move Eric Geddy to the pen, especially with the idea of Luis Garcia being the one that bumps him, because some of the stuff I've seen from Garcia, I'm not a fan of. Now, he's had a couple of good outings. He's had two good outings, last night notwithstanding. But I like Eric Geddy's potential, so I don't want to do that pre-playoffs.
Let me ask you this. And you do this, we do this a lot. Right now, Blue Ball as a starting pitcher or McCullers?
Well, I mean, I would go Blue Ball.
Me too.
But they're not. Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between what we would do and they're going to do. And like, they can do that and be
wrong.
They
have to do because of Lance.
Yeah, he did. He was okay in his rehab start, though. Like, that gives me some encouragement. Not that we should put too much stock in rehab numbers, but it's way better for him to look have a good line score than a bad line score.
And they tinkered with his sequencing and hot pitch usage and things like that. Great, but again, it's you didn't go get anybody at the deadline. That's behind you. You can't even sit there and
You can gripe about it.
You can gripe about it, but it ain't going to change anything, right? So this is going to be what, the fourth go-around with McCullers this year where you're hoping to find something different. We continue to sit there and look at these other guys going, we hope after how many times we've thrown Eric Geddy out there already that we hope he starts to figure it out and become the old Spencer Eric Geddy. But we're doing a whole lot of hoping right now with not a whole lot of answers to anything. And Blue Ball, at least in his last start, was good.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
his last start, they sent him down. That was it.
Well, that was out of the pen. Remember, remember they had an opener. He was a follower. He was the bullpen.
Oh, that's right.
Guy.
He was supposed to start, but instead there was an opener. Yeah. It was Okert, and then he pitched.
He pitched multiple innings, but
it was in Miami.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
Which is why I kind of like him in that role. Like, I think he's better suited as a multi-inning reliever than a starter right now. It might be his best role in general. Like, if you start looking at next year and crunching the numbers there, all of that. 713-780-ESPN. Back out to the HRMP listener line. Israel, you're in the Hive. What's up?
What's up? Hey, man, they're not going to rush Alvarez back. First of all, he's been out a long time. They got to see how his hand is going to react after that. They're not going to just chin him up and then his hand, he have a reaction with his hand and he's not ready.
What's the difference?
They're going to make sure that his hand,
like, what's the difference?
Well,
like,
I'm going to tell you the difference.
Okay.
They're going to make sure that his hand is healed and he's ready to go, and then they're going to send him up. They're going to see, once, you know, give a few bats in, they're going to evaluate his hand, see if it's healed and is ready to go. And also, with that 1.5 war, Cam ain't going nowhere. He's the best outfielder that they have. You keep hoping it, pushing that narrative.
Yeah.
He got a 1.5.
You keep fighting, Israel. You keep fighting. Keep hope alive. Because here's the thing. Let's go back to your other point first.
The 1.5 is the best in the outfield. He's the best outfielder they have. Myers is hurt right now. And that's just a fact. Everybody can look it up. Thank you.
He's the best outfielder
I like how he gets out there real quick. Finish his point. Got to go. See you later. Here's my thing with the Yordan hand thing. Like, if Yordan reports that his hand is good today, flight to Baltimore, baby. Flight to Baltimore. Because, look, Israel's point about, like, Yordan's hand could flare up on him again is 100% accurate. Like, would it shock me if Yordan's hand flares up after he plays back-to-back games Thursday, Friday? No. But it's not more strenuous in Baltimore than it would be in Corpus. So any at-bats that you're getting right now from Yordan, I want to be at the big league level. It's not a rushback. He's getting the same amount of work that he would be getting in Corpus as he would be with the bigs. I'm not asking for more games. I'm not asking for more plate appearances. I'm not asking for more physical toll on the hand. If he gives a good report today, his butt needs to be on a plane to Baltimore because you got 35 games left to play and your offense has been anemic.
We are not in May. We are not in June. Time is running out. And if you're going to play back-to-back games, regardless, to see where the hand is at, you need to play back-to-back games in a major league situation to help your major league team, even if it is for two games, because even as we figure out how the hand reacts and how he feels, the fact of the matter is he's better than, sorry, Israel, but it's to your point, whether you think Cam's the best outfielder they got or not, but the fact that in the lineup, he would instantly become one of your best hitters, putting him back in those next two games in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm. When Yordan comes back, I feel the Astros will get a little worse defensively. I mean, Altuve is going to play left field whenever Yordan comes back. Dubon and Arias will play some second most days. Not reading that 1984. That's not a very nice thing to say. You should be ashamed of yourself. Your mother's disappointed in you. Rocky, I'll act like Yordan is going to save the Astros. No. I don't want it to be twisted. I'm not saying that Yordan's going to save the Astros, but he helps. Yordan helps the Astros. Is Yordan Alvarez right now today one of their best nine offensive players?
Yes.
Then that helps. All he has to do is clear the ninth man, and it helps you.
It's the old adage, you go down swinging. You're going down swinging with your best players. You're not going down watching this, if, and God forbid this happens, but if the ship is sinking, you don't want your best players hitting back in back-to-back games in Corpus. You want him possibly saving the ship by coming in and adding some offense when they have been absolutely putrid offensively.
Yeah, and the whole physical toll, it's not a bigger physical toll. Like, how can it be? He's four at bats somewhere, four at bats somewhere else. It's the same physical toll. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. So Danielle Hunter actually made the NFL top 100 list. We thought he was going to be snubbed. So another Houston Texan coming in, which shows you how good this foundation is. The question that I have, a couple of questions here. Should he be ahead of Chandler Parsons? Should he be ahead of Micah Parsons? Age is a Cowboy fan. Also, who is the better rush, the edge rusher for the Texans? Who's the better edge? Danielle Hunter or Will Anderson? Which one of those guys is better? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN
92.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
We'll get to Danielle Hunter in a bit. People got some Yordan thoughts, and we do what the people tell us to do. We're puppets for you.
Separate.
We're just entertainment pieces. We're just here to do what you want us to do. At what point do we call the Yordan Alvarez trade even? I think he's taking a shot at me for calling that Kyle Tucker trade a lose-lose, tongue-in-cheek-ish. We never call that trade even. Never. Yordan,
is that key?
Yordan Alvarez turned a game upside down. I don't know. Is it key?
If it's, what's the area code?
747.
Oh, it's key.
So he usually,
so he's taking it from a Dodger perspective.
See, he usually types his name, though, when he does that. So it confuses me when he doesn't. How could you take that well from a Dodger perspective?
Well, the Dodgers are struggling right now, so he's not going to put his name on anything. He's going to place blame elsewhere.
So are the Astros,
though. I understand that. But then he's going to try to deflect by taking shots at the Astros. Because he's such a diehard chicken bleep Dodger fan. There's no way you ever say that Josh Fields for Yordan Alvarez is an even trade.
No. Dodger fans, I mean, they've won a lot, so it probably makes it easier to recover. But you have to look back at that trade as
awful.
At least, I don't know their history that much, but it would have to be one of their worst trades this century, at least.
I mean, they've always had a really, really deep farm system. They've always had all the money in the world, so they can recover quicker from bad trades. But yeah, I mean, just based on the returns for both players from the time the trade was made, even if Yordan doesn't do another thing, Josh Fields didn't do anything for them that year.
No, that wasn't help. Dustin's arguing with me on Twitter about this. He doesn't think that the Astros should call up Yordan until he, like, I guess, goes through a period of time. I don't know how long his period of time is. A text earlier said Dana Brown pretty much confirmed that he's not coming up this week. He did tell Robert Ford over the weekend that there was a possibility it could be Baltimore. I don't know what he said this morning. I didn't get a chance to listen to that because I was watching and listening to the Astros game.
I wonder how he feels about the city of Baltimore and the hotels.
You were on?
Yeah, because I was going to say, if push comes to shove, he has any issues and you're only going to be there if he is going to play the back-to-backs in Corpus. Then he won't be here till the homestand.
No. Hopefully they don't do fireworks before the games either.
Good point.
If he does that, then goodbye. Just go ahead and wait until they come home to the Dyke and they take on the Rockies next Tuesday. My argument with Dustin is, like, he says that he needs to find form and, you know, he's got to be able to get the rhythm. And I get that. I do understand that, the timing aspect of it. I think the timing aspect of it, the rhythm, the form, that's like an actual credible point, in my opinion. I think that deserves credence. The physical toll argument, to me, no credence whatsoever, because it's not an added physical toll. It's an equal physical toll. You're not adding anything. The argument that I would have, though, is that Yordan Álvarez without rhythm, without timing, and again, 2 for 4 yesterday with a walk, so I think he has a little bit of it. How much? That could be argued, but I think he has a little bit of it. I believe that he's instantly one of your best 9 offensive players. I asked Dustin, do you think that Yordan's one of the Astros' best 9 offensive players? He said 2025 Yordan, nope. Okay. He also posted some stats. He posted the Astros lineup today next to Yordan Alvarez's numbers this year, which Yordan Alvarez's numbers this year are not good.
Right.
That is correct. 210 batting average, 646 OPS, which in today's lineup would only be better than no starters. He wouldn't have a better OPS than any starters. A couple of the pinch hitters, but none of the starters. I don't believe that Yordan Alvarez currently is a 646 OPS player. Also, what do we know about Yordan Alvarez prior to him getting hurt? That he had a broken bone in his hand. Why are we ignoring the fact that he was hurt whenever he was posting a 210 batting average and a 646 OPS?
To me, I said it previous to Dustin's comments. He's better than just about any other option that you have right now to light a spark and give you more offense in this lineup. Everybody that needs to be in the lineup is in the lineup. But if he comes back, he's better than the guys you've been trotting out there. He's better than Chaz McCormick. He's better than Trammell until he got hurt. He's better than guys that are going to be in the lineup or have been in the lineup because he hasn't been. And I do believe that he was hurt. And I believe before, between the broken bone and the time that he ended up having to be put on the IL, I totally believe that he was dealing with this all of spring training, if not the majority of it, and from the time the season started, and that is exactly why he was not good.
Should call him up, Baltimore. And if they don't do it, they're wrong. At least that's what I think. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Texter, I'd rather him get his timing off of major league pitching, not double A corpus pitching.
I think there's a point to be made.
I think it goes both ways. Like, I do think that the ramp up in the rehab process and the rehab assignment, like let's go the ramp up. He joins the Astros next Tuesday when they open the homestand against the Rockies. Mm-hmm. I do think the ramp up could put him in a better spot when he joins the team to hit the ground running. But would he be in a better spot playing Thursday, Friday, Sunday in Corpus for that Tuesday game against the Rockies, or would he be in a better spot for that Tuesday game against the Rockies if he faced Baltimore Thursday, Friday, Sunday?
See, I think
he could go either way.
I think that from my standpoint, he could get fat and happy on double-A pitching. But we all know that the double-A pitchers are there for a reason. They don't have the kind of stuff that does the kind of things that major league pitchers do. So if
not consistently.
Yeah, so if you're going to see major league pitching in Baltimore, I think he would definitely be more primed and ready to really take off in Houston when they come back against Colorado.
If he saw big league pitching?
Yes.
Like let's just assume the target. Because, I mean, I think we could put tea leaves together, 2 and 2 together, and we hear Dana talk, and he's like, yeah, there's a possibility for Baltimore, but more homestand. It feels like the target date is August 26th, Tuesday against the Rockies, right? Like, that's all our target date?
That's exactly how they thought this out before this team started a tailspin.
So, Yordan yesterday in Corpus Tuesday. He's off today. He's going to play Thursday and Friday if all goes well. I imagine off day Saturday, play Sunday, off day Monday, play Tuesday. And that's the circled day, right?
Right.
So, let's play out the scenario both ways. Let's say they complete the rehab assignment in the minors in Corpus. He plays tomorrow, he plays Friday, off day Saturday, plays Sunday, Astros have the day off Monday, and then here we go. You've met your target date, Tuesday, August 26th against the Rockies. Let's say he catches a flight to Baltimore today. He plays against the Orioles Thursday, Friday. He sits Saturday, he plays Sunday, Astros have an off day Monday. There you go, there's your target date, Tuesday, August 26th. In which scenario, the minor league rehab option A, or basically a rehab in the bigs, option B, in which scenario is he readier to go Tuesday, August 26th?
to me, it's the major league from the standpoint of the level of pitching that he's going to face to get him ready and prepared. He might struggle a little bit early, but we've seen pitchers do that when they're called back up. They're going to have a level of not being 100% or being where they were when they were at their best before the injury. At the same time, he's facing the same kind of pitching that he's going to see consistently the rest of the year. So when he starts hitting that, he knows he then can hit the ground running the rest of the season because he's facing major league pitching. Mm-hmm. Instead of just getting fat and happy and crushing everything in double A, and then suddenly the pitching is at a different level when he plays Tuesday.
I think it's case by case for the player. And I think for Yordan, I think he'd be readier with the big league path. Now, I think there's some guys who could be overmatched coming off of rehab assignments and stuff like that, where they could kind of screw up their return, like a Jake Myers maybe. Like maybe Jake Myers couldn't one rehab game ready to go.
Because of the
– Well, not even the injury. Just like the prowess of the offensive player. Like Yordan is one of the better offensive players in baseball when right. We can all agree to that, right?
Yes.
So, like, I think that he's not going to be overmatched by big league pitching where it hurts his return. Whereas a batter who's kind of mediocre, I think hurrying his return to the bigs could impact him because he can get overmatched and overwhelmed. I don't put Yordan Alvarez in that category. I think that the big league option gets him readier for that Tuesday, August 26th.
I think there's only the things that you factor into that are the fact that this injury is in his hand. So we've talked about it from a conditioning standpoint. What he's going to do and what's going to happen to that hand is going to happen against pitching, live pitching, whether it's double A or major league pitching. So that's why I think that's a check mark for just put him back in the big leagues. And the only other thing that I think could factor it from a negative perspective when you asked it initially in terms of the scenarios is the travel. Because of the fact that you're leaving from a place, I assume they're still in Corpus, you're leaving from Corpus trying to get the flights and everything to line up to get him to Baltimore as soon as you can. And then as soon as he gets to Baltimore, he hits the ground running because he's going to be in the lineup because you need him, to where that could be taxing on him. Other than that, if all things are even to me, I'm putting him on the major league team as soon as I can.
Yeah, I would too. Texture says that Salisbury pushed Dana a couple times today about it, and that he basically said no way. That's disappointing. Dana's getting this one wrong, in my opinion. Texture, he's been swinging. He's had batting practice. He's done all that. It's time to see major league pitching. If his hand isn't hurting and it's not swollen, he needs to start seeing major league pitching. I'm in agreement, especially with the dire straits the Astros offense
is in. That's
the
biggest thing that we're not factoring in enough.
If they were hot and had a 5-game lead, take your time, Princess.
Exactly. If you're running away with the division or if you're in May or June, this is a totally different conversation. Your team is struggling and has hit rock bottom. You need whatever help you can get. And right now, after the deadline, with this many games, 35 games left, you need, if he's your best offensive player when he's healthy, you need to press that button right now and figure out what he's got for you.
Who on the active roster has feel or form right now, Heather? Outside of Correa, nobody. I think Correa is the only one.
Altuve had it and lost it.
It's all gone now. Yep. All right, 713-780-ESPN. If you had to pick, gun to your head, Steph Stradley's trying to dance around the question. Nah, that's not what we do here with the Killer Bees. If you had to pick one for 2025, who are you picking? Danielle Hunter or Will Anderson? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.